You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. Good evening, I'm Al Vona, host of The Public Eye. Nice to have you with us this Sunday evening. I've asked my guest and good friend, Glenn Madigan, Michigan attorney, and I consider Glenn one of the experts on elder law, elder abuse, and all issues facing many elders in this country today. Back last year, we spoke with Glenn about elder abuse and what's been, I guess, what's been eating at my end of things lately is the political debates, the presidential political debates, congressional races. An issue that I think should be front and center, elder abuse scams that are certainly being perpetrated against the elderly, which, by the way, is becoming one of the largest segment of the American population as the boomers start to age. So I've asked Glenn to come back this week and kind of update us and talk a little bit more about what's happening in terms of legislation. Should the government be doing more, that both on the state and the federal level, and what new scams, what new types of things are being perpetrated against the elderly. Glenn, nice to have you back.
Al, thanks for having me back.
You know, the last time you and I spoke, you eloquently described at that time we were talking about not only scams perpetrated against the elderly in terms of financial, but also some of the things that go on at assisted living, rehabilitation centers, nursing homes. So we talked about both the financial and the physical, and those are still very much in vogue. But since that conversation last year, and that's why I wanted to have you back, I keep listening to these debates. I keep listening to the presidential candidates. I keep listening to congressional candidates. And nobody mentions directly, and I'm really surprised by that nobody is saying specifically, and ladies and gentlemen, if I'm elected, I will do more to protect the elderly and the aging population in this country. Why is that not an issue that's front and center?
You know, you're 100% correct. It should be. It has not been frequently discussed along the election trail. Other senior issues, primarily health care, have been central to the discussion. Elder abuse is on the rise. It's really important issue to focus on, and the candidates have seemed to ignore it. And, if you look at, Senator Bernie Sanders, his stated policies, fully fund programs directed at ending elder abuse. He includes on his website some stats and facts about elder abuse. But again, no mention in the debates, no mention in the speeches. Former Vice President Biden doesn't mention it, on his website. He's focusing on, health care in particular, protecting, strengthening Social Security. So I agree. This is kind of the ignored topic as we come up on the election.
Yeah, it seems everybody is more focused on millennials. You know something, Glenn? And that, I understand that. That sort of makes sense. If you've got an 18, 19-year-old that probably will be voting for the next three decades, you certainly want to sway them and win them over now and hopefully keep them in your support. But yet the largest segment or a very large segment in this country, as you've talked about, is the elder population, the boomers, which will probably make up, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I'm thinking 40, 50% of the population is somewhere between 50 and perhaps 80 years old, and they seem to be totally ignored. Does that surprise you?
It does surprise me, and I think you're correct. Number one, people are, maybe looking at the long term, but to the detriment of the short term. So, we're in a situation where the boomers are getting older. Not only the people being abused, but the people taking care of them. So the sons and the daughters who are out there, taking care of mom or dad as they get older should absolutely be interested in the elder abuse issue, whether it's financial, whether it's physical, any other sort of elder abuse. Again, I think the candidates are missing a pretty big target by ignoring these issues.
I want to let people know just how close to home, and you see this more than anybody because it's something that you do on a day-to-day basis. But recently, in right here in Massachusetts, a couple married 50 years. The husband passed away a few years ago. The woman had two children. She was closer, two daughters. She was closer to one daughter than the other. So she made the one daughter that she was closer to the executor of her estate, which, as I understand, was fairly sizable. We're talking about a couple of $1 million plus property. The other daughter, who felt should have been a co-executor, or at least the executor, because she was the older of the two but didn't get along with her mother, felt left out, took the younger one to court, and I guess this thing is just becoming a big, big mess. Is that another thing that's proliferating here? Is that as people are getting older, you know, you leave estates to your children. Maybe one child out of the family is the sole executor. Does that present problems for the elderly as well?
It does. We see it on a regular basis, and I am a big proponent of transparency. And when I say that, I mean, at the time we put mom or dad's plan together, we always offer a family meeting. And when you get the kids in with the parents, now everybody's having an open discussion, not necessarily about specific dollar amounts or, you know, specific assets, but, you know, what types of care people want, you know, where they would want to live, you know, if they couldn't live at home anymore, or maybe we want to bring in care at home. How are we going to deal with, you know, with issues of incapacity later on? And it's a lot harder to fight about things later on when you all sat around a table and talked about the issues and about what the parent wanted.
So often, and again, you see this more than anybody else, and these are stories that, you know, they come through my office, come across my desk weekly. Whether it's a family, whether it's a child that you've named as executor, or somebody, a close confidant, someone you've had trust for all your life. But once you're no longer capable of managing your own finances, especially if it's a sizable estate, more and more, Glenn, and it scares me, because, you know, we're all going to get there at some point. You know, people bringing that elderly person physically to the bank and saying, you know, we have to take out money because I have to pay for your this extra insurance, or we have to get some coverage for the house. When in reality, all they're having the elderly person do is legally withdrawing the funds, and then the person who's been entrusted to look over that person is pocketing the money. I mean, is that going on more than most people realize?
It is. It is. And I will tell you and your listeners, one of the biggest mistakes that we see seniors making is adding a child's name or somebody else's name. Sometimes it's a caregiver, but most times it's a child's name to their bank account or their, you know, checking account, savings account, financial account, because not only does that give them full access to it, which, again, and sometimes it's okay, but you can get access by way of a power of attorney, financial power of attorney. But what you've done is you've given them ownership. And not only is that account that you put a kid's name on, you know, responsible for a kid's, you know, potential divorce or car accident, other problem that the child has, the banking rules supersede the will rules. And so what happens when a parent passes away is the bank account goes directly to the joint owner, and the other kids are out there, you know, wondering why they don't, you know, the will doesn't apply, the trust doesn't apply, because, you know, just like, you know, I'm on an account with my wife, if I pass away, it's hers. You know, nobody else gets to touch it, and that creates major problems and litigation. And so I think two things, you know, people are setting up their accounts in the wrong way to encourage abuse. And number two, the abuse is happening, and banks are getting better. They're not there yet. We've had calls from banks, you know, when a senior comes in with a child, and, you know, the bank will look at the power of attorney and call and say, hey, is this above board? But not enough of them are doing the policing that they should. And it's tough. I mean, commerce happens fast, but the ones that walk in, like you mentioned, you know, those are the obvious ones where one of the kids is taking them in to, you know, to pull out money and it's, you know, the red flags are all over.
Yeah, I mean, I knew a case a few years ago, an adult child still living at home. The other siblings, married or had, you know, were self-sufficient. This one had a drug addiction, living with his mom. Dad had passed on, and unbeknownst to most people, taking mom down to the bank once a week to feed his drug addiction until one of the other siblings caught on. And then it became a real, a real mess, which leads me back to the original question. At what point should this be more of a responsibility for lawmakers, Congress, local legislation? Or can you only do so much and then it has to be left to the individuals themselves?
So, I mean, the laws are out there. I mean, we have the Older Americans Act, which created a federal agency called the Administration on Aging. You know, these are services to help seniors, stay in their home. Elder rights, protection that focuses on protecting, seniors from abuse and neglect. And there's a handful of, places that people can call, and I'm not sure that they're aware of all, there's an elder care locator, online. Each state has its own adult protective services agency that helps combat elder abuse and provide services to elderly adults. Many localities, we just, locally got an elder abuse task force that is, it's kind of partnered with the prosecutor. And, there's National Center on Elder Abuse. There's the U.S. Department of Justice. So there's a lot of things out there. I think the gap is in the education, in letting people know what's out there and who they can call if a problem comes up and what signs to look for. I think that's the other education that has to be out there is from a financial standpoint, are, some of the kids seeing changes in the senior's possession, bank account balance, are the all of a sudden the legal documents, the will, the trust, the power of attorney, are they gone? We've seen caregivers step in and all of a sudden isolate a senior, and now you've got a situation where either the kids or the other family members are wondering what's going on. So, credit cards being used without permission, unexplained, cash withdrawals, maybe a change in a financial advisor, where, one of the kids is trying to move the senior's money around to a friendly financial advisor.
Right.
So there's signs out there that we look for, and it's just a matter of being aware of those and educating people on those signs.
Great points, and I want to come back perhaps have you elaborate on that isolation issue, because that was I'm glad you brought that up, because I think that is a major component of all this. But I do want to take a quick pause to let folks know that they're listening to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. I'm Al Vona, host of The Public Eye. My guest this week, and we welcome him back, is Michigan attorney and elder abuse expert Glenn Madigan. Glenn, the word ice, the minute you said that, I'm thinking, that's it. That's it right there. There's something that you, I don't know if you can legislate it, but, maybe talk about it a little bit more, because I don't think people realize, mom lives the next town over. Again, we talk a couple times a week on the phone. I hear this all the time, Glenn. We went over the holidays. And my question will be sometimes to people, do you see your mom or dad much? Not really, but, we're in contact. So, there's that opportunity. If you've been a public or a social person all your life and all of a sudden you're alone, I mean, anybody that shows any realm of caring or friendliness toward you, I'm sorry, but we're all vulnerable to that, are we not? And doesn't this isolation become the focus or should be the red flag for most families?
It absolutely should be. And I'll give you an example of that. I had a senior client of mine. Kids were out of state, one out east and one down south, hire a caregiver when he was grocery shopping because the woman came up, talked to him for 5 minutes. He realized he needed some help at home and had just let go of the caregiver that his kids had hired for him, and ended up ultimately He was in, you know, kind of mid-range, you know, not early-stage dementia, but a little beyond that, ended up signing two car leases for her. And the kids found out about it, and, you know, we had to get involved and terminate the leases, and she just disappeared. And wow. So I think a couple things. Number one, most abused seniors are dependent upon their abuser for some basic need. Whether the basic need is emotional, whether the basic need is, you know, food or transportation, you know, getting to the doctor. And so that person has the ability to pull that senior aside, isolate them. But I think, you know, when we look at elder abuse, the financial exploitation is part of some other elder abuse, you know, like emotional abuse. So, you know, we're looking for maybe changes in personality. So if the kids are talking, like you mentioned, you know, they call on the phone, look for changes in personality or behavior, or if they seem, you know, withdrawn or depressed or you know, are not responsive as they, you know, they usually are, or if they report it. I do also think that sometimes seniors will say, you know, I'm having problems with so-and-so, you know, and the kids just kind of brush it off as, well, you know what, it's just kind of every day. So, you know, every day things going on. So you have to look for really look for the signs and make sure you are, you know, keeping involved. And you know, it's a little easier to do sometimes around the holidays, you know, when you see, you know, if it's Thanksgiving, you know, around the Christmas and you know, other holidays, you know, end of the year where you're seeing the family members, it's a little easier to tell, but you know, certainly phone calls, you can gauge, you know, changes in behavior or personality.
I'm so glad that you're exactly right, but more importantly, a lot of times people will just, you know, pass it off. Well, you know, growing up, he was always on our case too, so he's probably driving him or her crazy. So, you know, they don't take it to heart. And as you said, listening to some, you know, the dialogue, the change in attitude, the change in voice, you know, maybe in some fashion reaching out without directly saying, look, I think this person's stealing from me. A couple other points, because you touched upon them. Again, this is a growing problem in this country. I don't know if legislation is the answer. Dementia, early dementia. Many people, it doesn't mean you forget your name or you forget where you live. I suppose it could go to that level. Even Alzheimer's, which is, you know, a step beyond that, you know, just a debilitating, a cruel and horrible disease. But those with dementia, you know, what do you tell clients when they come to you and say, look, mom or dad living alone, they've got dementia. You know, again, that's another red flag, is it not?
Absolutely. And so there's the, you know, there's the, you know, the kind of white and black. So you and I are talking, we hope that both of us are fully competent and you know, have a discussion and, you know, understand each other. And then you have the other end of it, which sometimes is maybe easier to deal with when somebody is totally incapacitated. And so you know that they can't do anything and they can't handle anything for themselves. And so there are, you know, people in place, powers of attorney and things that will handle things for them. It's the gray area, the one that you are speaking about, that causes the problem, that makes people the most vulnerable, where, you know, we've had, you know, our clients buying breakfast every day for whole restaurants, not realizing they did it, you know, the day before and the day before and the day before.
Oh, my God.
And so it is absolutely, you know, early stage, mid stage dementia, you know, causes all sorts of issues from a vulnerability standpoint. And that is, you know, it's tough to diagnose sometimes because we're all becoming a little more forgetful. And this goes beyond that. And, you know, if you get seniors who don't go to the doctor a lot, you know, again, maybe aren't seeing the family on a regular basis, it's tough to diagnose.
Two other things, and I'm sure, again, this is something that, you know, you're ahead of the so-called learning curve on this. I've been noticing an increase. I thought that both at the state or in federal level or one or the other, there was supposed to be a law mandating that, you know, no more prank phone calls, no more robocalls. I have actually seen an increase in my house, and it's almost, you can almost time it. It's around dinner time or shortly thereafter. They're nonsensical. It's like, you know, urgently, you must call us now in order to have your credit card protected or your bank account, a taped recording. But I'm thinking, okay, if this thing goes out to, I don't know, a million people a day, 7 days a week, inevitably, somebody is going to make that big mistake and make that phone call fearing that something serious is really happening when this is just a scam. How often is this happening?
It's happening a lot. And understand, this generation, you know, kind of the greatest generation, they grew up on a handshake and, you know, their honor. And so when they get a phone call that says, your Medicare has been cut off, or I can get you your prescription drugs less expensive, this is your grandson, and I'm in jail and I need bond, but you can't tell mom and dad. They believe it.
Yeah.
They believe it, especially if they're in a vulnerable place, and so absolutely, they're the kind of the perfect victims, unfortunately, for what's going on. And you're 100% right. The do not call list it does not work. And I get the call. I haven't answered my home telephone in probably 15 years. So I just let those things come in and go out. But we've had clients that call and say the IRS is sending somebody out to arrest me today.
Oh, geez.
And they believe it. They believe it.
You know, I'm laughing, but you know, in reality, this is, like you said, it's really happening, and people do believe it. And you know, it's always that most vulnerable person with the big heart. And like you said, I have to agree with you 100%, because my dad, my uncle's grandfather, everything was on someone's word or strictly on a handshake. And you just can't do that anymore. So, Glenn, it brings me back to the original point here, and the robocall, only because it's driving me crazy. I may do what you do, is just eventually, stop even utilizing that landline phone. But the fact of the matter is, there was legislation, was there not, that was supposed to curtail, if not completely eliminate, curtail it. Yet I see an increase in everybody I talk to in my neighborhood, the bulk of which are 60 or older, says the same thing. So why wouldn't a candidate primed for the presidency or a congressional seat or a senatorial seat, why wouldn't these be issues that would be front and center, knowing that, hey, even if the potential victim, maybe that 80-year-old woman is not voting anymore, or maybe she's not, or he's not listening coherently to what I'm talking about, their kids are, their nephews, their nieces, the people that will be taking care of them. You would still think that this would be positive content for anybody's campaign, but yet again, nothing is mentioned. It just behooves me that candidates are not bringing this to the forefront.
No, I agree. You hit the nail on the head, and you wonder why this is not an issue that we're hearing more about. I don't know the answer. Like you said, maybe the courting of millennials has become more important, and that's a non-issue to a 20-something or a 30-something. So, that may be it. But I think, as you said, they're missing a big opportunity here.
Glenn, if you were in a position to write legislation tomorrow, knowing what you know as an elder, attorney specializing in elder abuse, elder estate planning, and everything that revolves around folks as they get older, what would be something that you think is totally lacking in this country? We're talking about, socializing medicine and everything else. Well, how about protections for the elderly? What would be number one on your list?
I think I would give you two, and it's kind of a 1A and a 1B. I think we've got laws in place. We need to have funding to educate people about the laws, and people can be the family members, but more likely it is going to be the communities, whether the prosecutor's office, whether it's the senior centers. And so the 1B part of that is the funding, to me, would trickle down to localities. because I think it's hard for the federal government to cover somebody in Massachusetts and Michigan and California and just say, okay, we're putting this law in place. Different communities are totally different. Inner cities are different than farms, and people are spread out more, families are spread out more than they used to be. So I think that it's got to be education, funding, and I think the second part of that is it's got to be local funding. So if the federal government's going to do something about it, I think they need to, whether it's task forces, elder abuse task forces, put someone in charge and, get people involved locally.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, and that's why I always like having you come on, because you see this 24/7. A lot of people put it out of their mind. I'm healthy right now. I'm only in my mid-50s. I got another 10 years in the workforce. So I'm not going to worry about these things. I think most people should start thinking about it long before they get to the point where they can no longer do for themselves. But that's beside the point. Always enlightening, always educating, and I couldn't agree with you more that I think education is the key. But it, as you said, you can't force people to do it either. So it's really a two-pronged approach. If the education's out there, you got to be willing to seek that information and then do something about it. Secondly, obviously, this is an issue that affects coast to coast, family to family. I don't care where people are on the age bracket or what. You know somebody close by, family, friends, loved ones, who are in the twilight of their lives that have considerable assets or estates, or just, as you said, bodily harm, just protecting them and making sure that they're getting the care that they deserve in the latter part of their lives. So this will be a key issue for people to really get more information. So with that said, where can they get more information about the work and the research that you guys are doing?
Well, from my standpoint, we want to get the word out there that, if there is an elder abuse situation, there's an elder care locator that anyone can call, and it's a toll-free number. It's 800-677-1116. Again, it's 800-677-1116. And, failing that, every state has an adult protective services agency to combat elder abuse. And again, some of those are now partnering with the local prosecutor. So now it's got some teeth, because there was no enforcement before. There might be a task force. Now we figured out that something's been done, and then there's no teeth to prosecute it, and now they're marrying those things together. So, I think, if people have a loved one in their lives that they believe is being abused, call the elder care locator, and also, a local adult protective services is always a good place to start.
And I know some of the listeners will be saying, well, Al, Glenn's out in Michigan. It doesn't matter. He's an expert in the field, but what he's talking about resonates coast to coast. These issues and these toll-free numbers that he's talking about, these ways of reaching out to agencies that look after elder care, they are out there for the 50 states. It's up to you to take your part. Once again, I want to thank our good friend Glenn Madigan for being so gracious, getting up early, first of all, in preparation for the broadcast. His expertise are always welcome. As I said, I don't know of anybody in this country that doesn't have that loved one, that elderly loved one, that person that really needs someone in their life protecting them against abuse of all kinds, not only physical, but mental abuse and physical abuse and financial abuse, the things that Glenn has been talking about this evening. Any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios, the WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can pose any comments, questions to me directly. I certainly welcome that. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. And Glenn, real quick, your website, in case people want to go to that and get some information.
Yeah, absolutely. My website is actually MichiganEstatePlans.com, MichiganEstatePlans.com. And there's some videos and general information that would be, I think, helpful no matter where people live. Obviously, if you're in a different state, you're going to work with your own professionals. But there's some very good background information on what we're talking about today and other things relating to aging and the legal process. Yep.
So important. So very important, not only for the loved ones, but even for ourselves. As they say, we're all getting there sooner or later.
We are.
Yeah. So again, I want to thank my guest, elder attorney, expert, Glenn Madigan, for coming on The Public Eye. For The Public Eye, this is Al Vona. Thank you so much for tuning in.